This is 89.9 WWNO. Yes, we're headed for another art-filled week. Are you making plans or do you need some ideas? Well, you've come to the right place. Whether you're in the mood for an evening of opera, a chamber ensemble performance, or a comedic carnival drama, it's all in the mixed media. Come along as we go inside the arts. Hi, I'm your host, Diane Mack. Mezzo-soprano Hilary Ginther is the Maid of Orléans in Tchaikovsky's Joan of Arc. This production by the New Orleans Opera Association marks the American premiere of the English translation of this work. Hilary Ginther is here with Maestro Robert Lyle. Welcome to Inside the Arts.
Thank you, Diane.
Thank you for having me.
Hilary, your star continues to rise as you have made several debuts with various works and opera houses across the country in the last few years. And now New Orleans. Tell us a little about yourself and how you were attracted to opera.
I grew up actually in Appalachia, right in the Virginia-Tennessee line in a little town called Bristol. And I fell into classical music just by happenstance. I ended up joining a children's choir through my church and then meeting people who said, you sound like you have a classical voice rather than pop or country, things that were popular in my hometown. And I just fell in love with it. I fell in love with the challenge of it. I fell in love with the languages. I fell in love with the drama and the passion of it. From the time I was 12, it was all I wanted to do. So I ended up meeting a teacher in my hometown who then got a job at the University of Southern Mississippi. Marion Kyle is her name. I did my undergrad there at Southern Miss. Then I went to Cincinnati Conservatory for my master's degree, moved to New York after that, and have just had my sights set on it since. After doing various young artist programs, different institutions around the country, gained management and have just, you know, been slowly, steadily working my way up, hard fought, and really enjoying the ride.
What is your reaction to your reception by audiences?
Well, I'm actually really excited to be here in New Orleans. Joan of Arc is just so special here. It's quite an honor to portray her at the 100th year anniversary of her canonization as a saint. I've done a lot of research on her over the past 6 months to a year preparing for this role. A lot of times when audiences hear me sing or see me perform, I get the reaction of, how does all that sound come out of that little body? That's usually the common thread. But the thing that I'm very fortunate for is that the role calls for a lot of sound to come out of a little body, and I'm really happy to fill that bill.
Wow. Now, Robert, the Maid of Orléans is no stranger to the city of New Orleans. She is revered in a yearly parade on Twelfth Night,
yes.
Her birthday. How did you come to choose this opera at this time?
Well, I'm enjoying the opportunity to do something that's very new for me and for the company. This is an infrequently performed work in the United States. Certainly more frequently in Russia and periodically in Western Europe. So just the rarity of it is what attracted me. But also, as I became increasingly aware of the significance of Joan of Arc to our city, and I actually marched in that parade on Twelfth Night as a member of the crew of Joan of Arc, one of the things that really impressed me was the dedication of that organization to very high level of historical accuracy. The parade itself is put together in a way to tell the narrative of her life, a village girl who goes, with spiritual guidance, of course, leading the French army to victory, raising the siege of Orléans, which is why she's known as the Maid of Orléans. We call her Joan of Arc because if you say Orleans or Orléans, people think we're talking about New Orleans, and we're not. We're talking about a French city. But I, of course, in the many years I worked actively in the symphony world, did the Tchaikovsky symphonies and the concerti and works like that, and some of the ballets. So it's magnificent music. He is one of the world's greatest composers, and he did something a little unusual in that he undertook to create the libretto himself based on a famous German play. He was also imitating a style, French Grand Opera, which is the formal title of a very specific kind, in which the core of the nature of French Grand Opera is that it's based on history. And so here you have the perfect coincidence of that. You have a documented historical figure that was real and had massive accomplishments, and it's clothed in this enormously rich late Romantic language of Tchaikovsky. So it's the collection of all of those things that attracted my attention.
Now, how does Tchaikovsky raise the bar in French Grand Opera with this work?
Well, he is one of the few composers that is actually true to some of the factual incidents of Joan of Arc's life. The most important being that she was victorious for the French, and that's why they revere her greatly, and why she is known worldwide as the patron saint of soldiers. But she was captured in battle, and then through a trial that was more the Inquisition than the Church, she was found guilty of heresy and burned at the stake. I admire and appreciate the fact that Tchaikovsky kept that extremely dramatic close to her life story and to the opera, whereas a number of composers just simply set it aside and thought, she's the maiden warrior, and that will be her end.
Now, Hilary, how will you embody the spirit of Joan of Arc?
It is challenging. She has a lot to say. There's only a very few pages in the opera that I'm not involved in, so it is a marathon of a role, and it's long, and it's difficult to sing, but so rewarding. And the other thing is that, quite literally, there is battle in the opera. I've got a sword, and I'm fighting, you know, 250-pound men wielding a sword, and that's part of my embodiment, and my body is feeling it. It's going to be epic. It's going to be beautiful and heart-wrenching and exciting, and the music is just thunderous. You feel the battle. You feel everything that she's going through in the music. It's very well paired with the story.
Will audiences come away with a deeper appreciation of Joan's life and contributions?
I certainly hope so, particularly in Hilary Genther's hands.
Thank you.
Well, not only does she sing it beautifully, but she looks like Joan of Arc. I mean, she is slender and attractive and youthful. And remember, we're starting with a principal character who's 17 years old and whose entire military career lasted 2 years and 4 months, from the time she lifted the siege of Orléans until she was executed in the town square in Rouen. So it's a colorful and very dramatic piece of material. To heighten the festivities, we've invited the crew of Joan of Arc to attend the performance and also to join us before the performance at the Norman Traigle Fountain in front of the hall for a little cocktail party. And they will be there in their historic costumes, adding some real authenticity to the feeling of the occasion. And, of course, the public is invited to come to that cocktail party as well. To me, it's a fun way to launch this grand-scale opera.
It's a free event that happens before the Friday night performance?
Correct. At 6 o'clock.
Mezzo-soprano Hilary Genther and maestro Robert Lyle, thanks so much for stopping by.
Thank you, Diane.
Thank you.
The New Orleans Opera Association presents Tchaikovsky's Joan of Arc. Performances run Friday, February 7th at 7:30 p.m. and Sunday, February 9th at 2:30 p.m. at the Mahalia Jackson Theater for the Performing Arts. More info is online at neworleansopera.org. Musaica Chamber Ensemble continues its 14th season, The Architecture of Music, with keyboard cornerstones of Bach and Fauré. Musaica violist and president Bruce Owen joins us now with details. Welcome back.
Oh, thanks so much for having me again.
Musaica's season opened in September with music of Art Deco. In keeping with your theme, The Architecture of Music, you travel further back in time now. How do works from the Baroque era fit in with your theme, The Architecture of Music?
All of the music that we play is based on a foundation that is created by music that has come before it. And we're also playing some pieces that were originally for one instrument and are so great that they really form a foundation or even a cornerstone of pieces that come after, because composers are inspired by their predecessors, and also composers are inspired by their contemporaries. We're doing pieces that display both examples. A piece by Bach can be played by a harpsichord, or it can be played by a symphony orchestra, and it works either way. And the thing about Fauré is that his life actually spanned divergent styles of music. When Fauré was born, Chopin was still composing, and when he died in 1924, it was already in the era of Schoenberg and 12-tone music. And he was inspired by all those guys and the works that he wrote.
So, Bruce, take us through the experience. Which works will you perform?
We're starting actually with a little bit of predecessor to the Baroque era. We're doing three short pieces that were originally written for lute. These have been transcribed for harp, violin, and cello. People might recognize these pieces because they actually formed the cornerstone of parts of Respighi's Ancient Airs and Dances suites. But these pieces are all from around 1600 by a composer named Molinaro, and another one by Galilei, and then there's one anonymous composer. So that's how we'll be starting the concert. Then we'll be moving on to the Trio Sonata in C minor, Opus 2, number 6, by Jean-Baptiste Lolet. He's actually called Jean-Baptiste Lolet of London to distinguish him. He's not the same as the Lully who lived in France or Italy. A lot of these guys had the same names. This arrangement will be for harp, flute, and oboe, and we'll have a cello continuo. That will be a four-movement work. Then we're moving on to one of the cornerstones of music in general, which is the Bach-Goldberg variations. The original composition for harpsichord includes an aria, and then there are 30 variations. We are playing a string trio arrangement by the violinist Dmitri Sidovetsky. He did this arrangement back in the 20th century, I think in the 1980s. We will be playing the aria in about 8 of the variations. And then we move on to the highlight of our program, the piano quartet by Gabriel Fauré. This is actually his second piano quartet in G minor. This was written in 1886. He actually was the original pianist on the premiere performance of this piece. Fauré, like Bach, was also an organist and a pianist. He wrote it partly in memory of his father who had just passed away. And then there's this beautiful viola solo that I get to play. Somebody actually said if the viola hadn't already been invented, it would have had to be created in order to play this melody.
Wow. What was your inspiration in choosing the Bach and the Fauré pieces?
You know, I just had this feeling about it. I just have to say that. I was actually listening to different pieces by Fauré, and there's just something, even though the time period really didn't overlap with Johann Sebastian Bach at all, that there's something that seems to connect them. And I was trying to figure out what it was, and I think just the fact that they were both keyboard players on the organ, piano, harpsichord, there is some kind of connection that I could hear between the pieces. I like to think that there was certainly music by Bach that probably influenced the way that Fauré wrote his works.
Now, the Musica Chamber Ensemble, tell us about the musicians that make up the group.
Well, most of us are members of the Louisiana Philharmonic Orchestra. We have been doing this for, this is our 14th season now,
yeah.
And we really enjoy playing chamber music as a counterpart to our playing in a huge ensemble. In addition, my friend Stefan Koch, who's a cellist and lives in Michigan, is actually coming down for his 6th performance with us for the Fauré Piano Quartet and the Bach-Goldberg Variations.
What are you hoping audiences will remember about the architecture of music long after hearing this performance?
I like to think that what we perform and what people hear has more of a permanence, just like a building, a cornerstone, a bridge, any kind of actual structure that you can see, touch, feel. You can do the same with music.
Musica violist and president Bruce Owen, thanks so much.
Thanks so much for having me.
Musica Chamber Ensemble presents Keyboard Cornerstones of Bach and Fauré. Performances are on Monday, February 10th, at Mulholland Methodist Church in Metairie, and on Tuesday, February 11th, at the Marigny Opera House. Both performances are at 7:30 p.m. The concerts are free to the public. Donations are suggested. More info is online at musaica.org. You're listening to Inside the Arts on 89.9 WWNO, New Orleans Public Radio. I'm Diane Mack. Actor-writer Ricky Graham's legendary carnival comedy tribute to local yacht culture is celebrating a milestone. Yes, the 25th anniversary of And the Ball and All is upon us. And this year, it's back with a twist. Ricky Graham and cast member Gary Rucker are here with all the details, including an appearance by actress Becky Allen. Welcome.
Great to be here.
Thank you.
It's carnival time.
Yes, it is. Congratulations on your anniversary.
Thank you. It's crazy to think that this is 25 years old. You know, I never even thought I would live to be 25, much less have a play last that long.
Why is it such a draw for audiences over all this time?
It was a treat when it first opened at the True Brew, and we said, oh, we're going to extend another week, and it played for 2 years. I have to confess, the only reason I wrote this play is to write a play about New Orleans where people actually sounded like they were from New Orleans. That was the only goal I had in mind. That it became a success and people still want to see it is, you know, gravy. It was all a surprise to everyone involved.
This was back in 1995.
That's right.
Was there something that inspired you?
Well, my mother, she had a heart attack and she was in the hospital, and I started thinking about stuff that we used to do. And so you'd expect now to have me write the Glass Menagerie, but nope. No, I was thinking about all the – it used to be called coffee parties when I was in grammar school, where the women who had kids going to school together would get together during the week and they would drink coffee and basically dish. It's like what you watch on TV now when you watch The Talk or the stuff like that, but they would come to each other's houses and do that. And whenever I was homesick, I was – privy to the information. That was kind of like the genesis of the show.
Uh-huh. Now, for the uninitiated, what is a yacht?
For people back in the 50s in particular, when I was growing up, it's the way people talked.
Yeah. And you hear it and you pick up on it. My grandma was from Lutcher, but moved to New Orleans, and then suddenly she knew all the expressions that all the New Orleans ladies had. So, it's cancerous, but in a good way.
Now, yeah. How has the play changed over the years?
Up to 2005, whenever we'd do the show, we would kind of update it a little bit. And then after Katrina, we said, no, we need to present this as a period piece. And right after Katrina, the first 2 years, was very comforting to an audience that knew the show to be nostalgic about 1995, literally. And we've kept that way ever since. In the program, it specifically says, we're in 1995, so in that way, it hasn't changed.
So what will be the experience of the 25th anniversary show?
Specifically, we were going to be casting most of the roles with men. At first, this was just this joke idea that you have in a bar, you know, at 2 o'clock in the morning.
And right? What's funny is this joke has been going on for so long that I was supposed to play the really young girl. But now I'm far too old to play the young girl, so I have to play one of the mamas now. But that's how long he's been talking about doing this.
And what happened this past year is two of the actors who have been in the show every year had some personal issues, some health issues. So it's like we can't just replace these two,
icons.
Right, exactly. Yeah. So instead of doing that, we're just going to do a whole different thing and have men. And it's not a stunt, really, because all the actors in the show are great comic actors who are playing the roles for real.
Yeah, I think one of the things about this play that gives it such longevity is each of these women is so specifically written and so three-dimensional and fleshed out, it doesn't really matter who's playing the role because the role kind of exists beyond the actor. You know what I mean? So, I mean, I've seen it. We've presented it at Rivertown since 2012. I watch it every single year. There's always different people in the show, but it's always that's that character. They're playing that character how it's supposed to be played, and it's so funny. So now the fact that it's men, it just happens to be men. But we're all playing like the heart of who each of our characters are. And I think that's what's going to kind of sustain it.
So now, what is the storyline?
It's a group of women who belong to a small carnival club. They have a truck float that parades every year. And they're trying to decide on next year's theme. And that's the basic premise of it. And then along the way, there's some red herrings. And you find some money was stolen. And it all gets resolved.
So now, tell us about your characters.
I'm playing my Aunt Kathy. I knew these women growing up, so I'm just kind of paying tribute to that. But my character's name's Anime. What's her last name?
Bergeron.
Bergeron, yeah. She babysits her daughter-in-law's kids. They're outside in the van. She leaves them in the van with the window cracked. And she's the, secretary?
Yeah.
She's the one that's snacking the whole time. Just kind of outspoken, funny, kind of mama lady, you know.
And I'm Lena Catalinata. She's the one that still works. She works for her husband's business, and she's taken over the business. She's the only one that works all the time. So when she comes to the meeting, she just makes it a business just to sit. And everybody's got to bring her drinks and bring her cigarettes and bring her food.
That's why Ricky wanted that role. That's, he doesn't have any blocking. Right. He just sits in the chair the whole time.
I'm all ready to go. But this was a friend of my mother's. Miss Yvonne is the character I'm playing. They're all real people.
You can tell, like, Ricky knew these women because they're all so real and so specific. You know, they're dynamic, like who gets along with who and who aggravates who. It's all just so real. I watch it every year and I laugh every single year. It's a bunch of women sitting around chatting. And every time one of them leaves a room, they talk about whoever left the room. It's that kind of thing.
Yeah, it looks like she got a hair done in Blaine Kern.
Yeah. That kind of, so. In the finale of the show, you get to see us all in our ball costumes.
That's right. It's worth an admission just to see that. And Becky is going to actually be in the show, yeah, narrating the ball as herself.
Who else is in the cast?
Kyle Dagapont, Bob Eads, Sean Patterson, and Darren Hayes. And Tracy Collins, who has played women in the show, is playing the one male, Ernesto the costume maker.
It's almost like Disney World. You don't care who's playing the princess. You see Cinderella. So that's kind of what it's like. You know?
What is it that endears locals and visitors alike to And the Ball and All?
I think that, especially people in New Orleans, we like having stuff that belongs to us. And it's the kind of show where if you're not from New Orleans, it's a very funny show. But if you are from New Orleans, there's all those references you get. And we talk about Holmeses and Krause and all the, like, you get all those references. So it's special to you. It's something you get to have a really good time claiming, I think.
Actors Ricky Graham and Gary Rucker, thanks. It's been fun.
Thank you for having
me. Kenner's Rivertown Theaters for the Performing Arts brings back a Mardi Gras tradition with Ricky Graham's comedic production And the Ball and All. Performances run February 13th through 17th. More info is online at rivertowntheaters.com. That's our show for this week. Major support for Inside the Arts comes from the Hellas Foundation. Additional support comes from Le Petit Theater. Our program is a production of WWNO and is archived at WWNO.org. I'll be back with more ideas for your artistic palette on Tuesdays at 1 p.m., Wednesdays at 8:30 p.m., and a shortened edition on Thursday mornings at 8:45 when we'll go Inside the Arts. I'm Diane Mack.